This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Thank you for listening to a Joycast from Joy 94.9. Find more Joycasts and show blogs, go to joy.org.au.
My guest tonight on Bent Notes has been a professional drummer since the early age of 14. He's travelled to Boston to study on a scholarship at Berklee College and then spent 4 years working in New York before returning to Melbourne 2 years ago. In fact, 2 years ago today, I believe,
where he now teaches
and leads his own jazz funk group, Skyroku, as well as his quartet, which will be performing at this year's Marysville Jazz and Blues Weekend. It's my pleasure to welcome to the Bent Notes studio Ben Charnley. Welcome.
Thank you. Thanks, David. Cheers.
Professional drummer at 14.
Yeah.
That's a very early start. How did that come about?
Yeah, well, I guess I grew up in Albury in the country. I guess I was really fortunate. I had a really solid first drum teacher. He was really good at just showing me the fundamentals of drums, and I just had a really solid start. And then after that, I got right into Jimi Hendrix and Led Zeppelin and all those classic rock stuff. And then from there, kind of segued into more funk, and then before making my way into jazz, probably by the time I was about 18 or so. And when I was at high school, there wasn't much of a decent music program at my school, so we used to entertain ourselves by playing. I was very fortunate. There was some really good musicians at my high school, and I'm still very good friends with them today, and I still play with them today. So one of them is Ryan Griffith, big shout out. So yeah, he plays a lot around the city. He's a great guitarist, and I did a Melbourne International Jazz Festival show this year, and I got Ryan in to play with me for old times. And yeah, so yeah, it was young, and there was our parents needed to be at all our gigs basically, because we were so underage. Can you still do that today? I don't know, but hopefully you can. It was great, because by the time we were 18, I'd already seen all the inside of every single pub in my local town and quite a few in Melbourne. So when we turned 18, it wasn't such a big deal, you know, because the mysteries had already been unravelled.
And of course you were, because you're turning 18 doesn't mean you were giving up the job. You were still working.
Yeah. So by the time I was in 18 and in year 12, I was probably playing 2 or 3 gigs a week.
But, oh, wow.
And
studying.
Somewhat.
Did you grow up as a child in a musical environment?
Not particularly. My parents were both primary school teachers, but they had a love for music, and they would always put on records, and especially on Friday night. You know what teachers are like. They let their hair down on Friday night, and so that's when the music had come out. And yeah, they weren't particularly into jazz. I don't think they had any jazz at home, but they had some good stuff there. So my dad had tended to gravitate towards the Neil Young and classic 70s stuff. My mum was more kind of British, 60s Beatles. And I still love that music today. So yeah.
A wide range of music for you to remember. What's your earliest recollection of music?
Oh, Beatles. Yeah. When I was at primary school, I'd come home like pretty much every day from school, and there was one Beatles greatest hits record in my parents' collection, and I found it and I just wore it out.
Oh, did you really?
Yeah. And I've still got it in my house today, and I play a lot of vinyl around the house, and I still got that Beatles greatest hits record, and it skips a fair bit.
Why do you still play vinyl?
I like the sound of it, you know, just that analog sound, and also it's like a perfect representation of a sound wave, you know. It's like a sound wave carved into plastic, you know.
It is.
And it's something that never really went away for me. Throughout my 20s, I just collected vinyl when it wasn't particularly the thing to do, and it was a lot cheaper then, which is good.
It's gone
up a bit now. And I think I like albums, you know, especially the old albums. They're not that long. They're generally 35, 40 minutes each album, and I think that's a really good amount of time in order to concentrate. It's almost like you play a record, you flip it, and it's like a set if you were to watch a live band. And I think that's a good amount of headspace.
It is actually. Very, very much so. It's probably why the sets are about that length, because that was about the length that LPs would get. I think it was maximum about 22 minutes a side you could get on an LP if you really squashed it in.
Yeah, and whereas like CDs are over 70 minutes, it was always a bit too long for me. So,
it's a long time to sit and listen, isn't it?
Yeah.
It is indeed. Now, the drums. I remember when I was at tech school that absolutely everyone wanted to play the drums. Was that the case when you were growing up through school?
Not particularly. I mean, Albury wasn't the biggest place, and there was a couple in my high school, but most people would, I guess, wanted to play guitar.
Oh.
Yeah, so I didn't have that many kind of mentors around Albury. There was a few, but my first teacher, Kevin McGrath, was very generous with his time and very, you know, generous with just helping me out. He'd throw me gigs as a sub as well as a young age, and you know, that kind of mentorship really helps. And you know, it's a kind of thing, as you get older you want to mentor people in the same kind of way if you can.
What's the hardest thing to do when learning to play drums? What's the thing that is so difficult to grasp? Is there anything like that?
I think any musical instrument is hard. It's just how far you want to take it, you know? So I don't know if drums are particularly hard. I guess the thing is with drums, it's four-way coordination. So with my own students, I just, you know, if they're getting frustrated and they keep on stuffing the same thing up over and over again, I'll say, okay, let's take one of those three parts out, and four parts out. So let's take it down to three parts. If that's still too hard, let's take one of those out. There's two parts. And so you can, you know, it's layers. But at the same time, there's muscle memory, so it sounds really hard having four things going at once.
It sounds difficult.
Yeah, but it's just like you're just slowly building the blocks, and until you see, you know, some of the, especially what I find really crazy, you see the some of the Cuban jazz drummers, like Horacio Hernandez, who can play a clave on their left foot and then just play anything against that. I studied that at uni and can do some of that, but you know, that I think that's taking it to a really crazy,
very much to the nth degree.
Yeah.
What does a kit need to be? Because again, I remember back to Clayton Tech, and one of our drummers loved a kit with, I think he had two bass drums, about eight toms. I think he had two hi-hats. Can't remember how many cymbals he had around the top. Mm. He loved having this huge kit, but it just seemed a little bit of overkill.
Yeah, I mean, I think you ask most working drummers and they'll say, what's the best thing about a kit? And they'd say, find me a light drum kit. This is so heavy to carry around. Well, so I've actually, you know, my hardware, which I've got from DW, and it's like I got pretty much the lightest hardware that you can, you know, that a working drummer can carry around. Like, it's impressive to play a big kit, but if you're, you know, schlepping your own drums around to three or four shows a week, you want it to be light.
Indeed.
But, I mean, you want it to sound good as well.
It's the time where you always want to play a piccolo, to carry the piccolo with you wherever you go, rather than the drums, which always seem so complex, so many bits and pieces to get in and out of a car or a trailer or whatever.
Yeah, I think at a young age I recognised that was my fate. There was no bailing out.
Now, you have produced an album. It's called Riverside Drive, the Ben Charnley Trio. I love the cover.
Thanks, yeah.
Picture from America?
Yeah. When I was living in New York, I lived in the Washington Heights neighborhood, which is just above Harlem. And the photos taken, it's actually on Riverside Drive, which is, you know, the west side of that neighborhood. And it's up against the Hudson River, and I'd go walking along there. And in the summer, that's really beautiful. And yeah, it was just, I guess, an association with that time and living in that place.
Because you've got the image of the trees, which haven't got leaves on at this stage.
No, the photo was taken in winter. Yeah.
And a couple of traffic lights with the red light really standing out. Why did you record your album?
I wanted to document the time that I spent in America. I was there for about 7 years, and I guess it was coming towards the end of that time, and I wanted to just have a document. It's almost like a journal of that time in my life. And, you know, as a drummer, we don't tend to be band leaders very much. I mean, I'm part of a lot of online drum forums on you know, social media, and there's a lot of talk about what gear you're using, and there's not so much talk about leading a band. But yeah, it was challenging, and through the process of making the album, I figured out, I think, more about what I wanted to do as a musician, and I figured out, I think, my own strengths and probably my own weaknesses. But yeah, it was a document of a time for myself. But yeah, but it also made me evaluate what kind of musician I was, and I recorded a lot more than I ended up using, and over the. Because it was a few sessions that made up the record, and then I realised, well, actually, the trio stuff sounds the best. So, you know, I had tracks with horns that I just didn't end up using because I was like, you know, they're fine, they're good, but the real essential thing came out in the trio recordings. And I love trios. I love, you know, the classics, I guess, are the Bill Evans trio and... you know, Keith Jarrett trio as well, which I had the benefit of seeing when I was in New York. So, yeah.
What piece do you think we should listen to from this particular album? What do you reckon?
I like Windows. It's Chick Corea tune from the late the 60s. And, yeah, love that tune.
Thank you for listening to a Joycast from Joy 94.9. Find more Joycasts and show blogs, go to joy.org.au.
Ben, how important is leading a band to a musician? Is the idea that you can get out there and it's your band important, or is the important thing to be out there playing music and working with others generally?
I'm not sure if it's an either or. I think it's definitely important to be playing and collaborating with different people. But leading a band, it is different. It does force you to evaluate what you're all about as an artist, and for myself, it took a while, and I thought it was going to be one thing. I thought, you know, it was going to be this sort of bombastic, hard bop, kind of edgy stuff, because I was working on that a lot, especially when I was at Berkeley, but then it ended up being like the more sensitive, impressionistic trio stuff was actually what worked. And so I think, yeah, leading a band is important, but recording is really important.
Recording records of what you're doing and spending the time thinking about what it is that you're trying to achieve.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah.
You've played and led a number of bands over the years. Have you always had a similar expectation when you're working with a band of achieving something, or have you changed your expectations based upon the band that you've been working with?
I mean, as a drummer and a rhythm section player, you tend to get hired a lot as a side person. So you could be working with anyone. It's really common that I'll be working with musicians I've never met with no rehearsal, and they're just calling tunes. It's part of what we do, that you just need to know a lot of standards and you need to know that repertoire. And sometimes it'll be really, really easy and things will flow. And sometimes, it, you know, it mightn't work and you'll need to dig deep. But that's interesting too. I mean, in the process of doing that, you need to stand strong. Yeah, I think it's an important skill to collaborate to. Yeah.
And that's exactly what you'll be doing at Marysville this year. You'll be collaborating and leading your own trio up at Marysville.
Yeah, we might rehearse a little bit though, I think.
Oh, you reckon? You're not just going to walk up on stage and call
no,
the tunes?
I think we might need to rehearse for that one, yes.
What can we expect from the trio, the Ben Charnley trio at Marysville?
Yeah, well, we're going to have Mina Yu on piano, and Mina is a phenomenal piano player. You just heard her on that version of Windows. We've been collaborating for about 6 or 7 years and went through Berklee College of Music together. Yeah, she's just incredible. Be joined by Richard Butler as well on sax, and I've played a few gigs with Richard now. We did a tribute to Weather Report at the Paris Cat.
Right.
It was awesome. I don't get many calls to do fusion, so it was really cool for me to have to shed that stuff and to learn that music a bit better. But Richard is a consummate pro and a great, great sax player. And my man Jordan Taranto on the bass. And I played a lot of gigs with Jordan, and he's a really swinging bass player. So be a lot of fun.
It will be a lot of fun indeed. I think you're in the Vibe Hotel up there on the Sunday afternoon. But before you're playing in the trio, you're actually conducting a workshop.
Yeah, so I got an email a couple of weeks back with an invitation to do a workshop, and the email asked me, you know, what do you want the workshop to be about? So I had a bit of a think about it and think about what I could convey and what I could teach that would be of value. I thought, okay, maybe let's have a workshop on what rhythm sections do and some tricks of the trade that we use in the rhythm section. And I don't think it's important just to the rhythm section players. I think it's also important to all musicians so that they can get the best performance out of their rhythm section and how they can learn to interact with them. Because often, you know, you'll see some musicians that really utilize a rhythm section well and others don't. It's like they've got this car and they don't know how to drive it. Yeah, it's going to be all about, I've called it something like rhythm section vocabulary.
I love the name.
Yeah, and there's a language, there's a vocabulary, there's a language to what we do. You know, we were chatting before off air about Philly Joe Jones, and you listen to that Miles Davis rhythm section in the 50s, and they've got all of these ensemble hits that they'll use all the time. You hear it in a tune like Two Bass Hit, where they'll use these kind of language behind a soloist just to keep things interesting, keep things cooking. We're going to be talking about those techniques and just about the mindset to being in a rhythm section and reacting with one.
Sounds like a great workshop to attend at the Marysville Information and Regional Arts Space. It's a new building in Marysville. That's 1:30 on Sunday, October 21. And at 3 p.m. you're on at Vibe in the trio. It's in the quartet, actually. It's four people, isn't it?
Yep.
So it's not
yep.
a trio. It's a
quartet.
No,
we're adding a horn player for this one. Yeah.
Which is superb to have. Festivals.
Love them.
What is it about festivals that grabs your attention as a musician?
I like the extra profile it gives to jazz. So it really focuses people's attention and appreciation on the art form. I think a lot of people love jazz. Like most of the jazz musicians in this city will get a lot of corporate and wedding gigs, and people love having that background jazz. They love that sort of romantic texture of jazz in the background. And I think what a festival does is it actually makes people listen. It foregrounds the music, and it's just a chance to listen to a whole bunch of stuff that you mightn't have checked out. And I'm looking forward to just seeing what's around as well.
Well, certainly the festival the weekend, I should say, because it's the Jazz and Blues weekend in Marysville.
Yep.
It's got a great program, well worth looking at. And Ben, you're part of that program on Sunday, the 21st of October, up there in Marysville. More details about Ben from your website, bencharnley.com. Ben Charnley, charnley.com. Mm-hmm. Great little website there.
Thanks.
A bit of bio information about who you are. Most useful, I'd have to say. Some links to your music and some videos. Great to see. And, of course, the Marysville Jazz and Blues Weekend is marysvillejazzandblues.com. All that great information there, the program and tickets for the Marysville Festival. Ben, thank you so much for your time tonight here on Bent Notes. I think we need to go out with some more music from your album. Any particular piece that you'd like to hear?
Yeah. We can, I think, let's go with Conception. So that's the first track on the album, and this was recorded actually in New Jersey. So we were going across the Hudson there to record it a couple of years back. I was thinking about Rudy Van Gelder, who recorded all of those amazing sessions, you know, in New Jersey. So it was, we were thinking that in the car on the way over. It was a freezing winter's day when we recorded this track. But yeah, I was happy with the way this came out. It's a really tricky tune, really hard changes. So, Conception.
My guest on Bent Notes has been drummer Ben Charnley.
Joy 94.9 is a GLBTIQ community radio station in Melbourne, Australia. Support Joy 94.9 by becoming a member at joy.org.au.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.